Hey, this is Rob Unspach, and welcome back to another edition of eHeroes for those keeping count. This is episode 406, and you know, you guys have been hanging on for 400 and some episodes. I appreciate it, and you know, we all are seeking those experts in our lives, but who helps the experts? So my next guest does exactly that, helping the experts. So I want to welcome Sierra Lueck. Hopefully I spelled that right. And thanks for being here.
Yeah, I really appreciate being here with you, Rob. Like, you guys don't know this, but before this episode started, he was already behind the scenes making me cry with some really powerful stories. So whether you have been listening for all 400 episodes or you are tuning in for the first time, you need to open your ears and maybe even your spiritual ears and just really heed whatever the voice of God is inside of you that's talking to you, or like I like to call it, that still small voice that's inside of you. It's always talking, and we're not always listening. There's a lot of chatter that goes on in our brain, so tune in your ear, because Rob has some really powerful stuff to share with you guys.
You know, I do share a lot of it in my books. Unfortunately, you know, after my first couple books came out, people are like, oh yeah, I'm all excited, I want to read your books. And then towards, you know, 10, 11, 12, they're like, Rob, I don't have time to read all your books. It's too many. And now it's up to, like, I've produced 70 some books now over the last 13 years. People are like, I don't want to read it. Just tell me the secrets. It's, you know, life is funny to entrepreneurs, I think. You know, we take on a lot of things, a lot of responsibility, and we do it because we want freedom in our lives. But a lot of times, freedom comes at a cost. And what I was explaining to Sierra is that when my daughter was 10 years old, she was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And we thought that was her death sentence. You know, years went by, and through various, you know, eye surgeries and needle pricks and many, many trips to the ER, you know, she became better. But, you know, there's a lot of in between there. You know, she got married, she got pregnant, and we thought this is going to be great. You know, first, you know, another grandchild. Problem was, the baby was born too early, lived 14 days, and passed away. You know, my daughter thought that was the end of the world, you know, losing her child. But the doctors believed that the baby gave up his life so she could be saved. And because of the pregnancy, had so much trauma on her body, her kidneys started failing. So not only was her pancreas not working, but her kidneys weren't working. So she had to get dialysis a couple times a week. And that went on for about 4 years, four or five years. And a young woman who died, her organs became my daughter's organs, new pancreas, new kidney. And, you know, my daughter's no longer diabetic. She's no longer has kidney issues, you know, and she can live a fulfilled life. And, you know, one of the first things that she did was start working in a nursing home so she could help other people, older people, not only that have diabetes themselves, but have dementia issues. And she loves it. So, you know, yes, it was tragic to lose a grandson. It was tragic to see my daughter go through all that. But there's always a silver lining.
Well, and I think it's really powerful how, as we were talking, it's like, even just a couple of the other things you said, like, there's just a lot of connections and threads, I think. And so wherever you're listening to this episode on, if you have the ability to drop a comment somewhere, if you've had some kind of a similar story in your life, I would love to hear your story too. For me, my grandmother actually had dementia real bad right before she passed away a few years ago. And I had been in business, I think, at that point for about 3 years. And it hit me harder than I expected because I wasn't super close to her. But the way that she died was just so, in my mind, treacherous. It was like a tragedy for sure. And she just didn't want to fight. She had her cancer came back. She'd had cancer before. She fought it. She beat it. And cancer came back. And they told her she had to do chemotherapy and radiation. And she said, I don't want to do that anymore. And she just let the cancer take her. And it took about a year and a half. It was such a slow and painful death. And when I finally was able to go back down and visit my family, because my mom, I hadn't seen my mom for more than a year because she was in another state taking care of my grandmother. And when I went down there to go visit, like, she was a shell of herself. Like, I thought this woman was going to outlive my parents. I thought she was going to outlive all of us. Like, she was always very highly energetic. And then when she decided to let go, like, she did, she let go. And it was just crazy to watch, like, dementia set in and just to see all the patterns. I think you also mentioned that, was it your dad who had a brain tumor?
My dad had a brain tumor last year and was operated on, and he came, he was home for about 5 days, then had a stroke, and then was in rehab for about a month and a half. Yeah. So, you know,
my son's brain tumor is actually the reason I even started my business, was because the way we found out he had a brain tumor was he was actually cooking in the kitchen. He had what's called a focal seizure. I don't know if your dad had those too, but you can't even tell that they're having a seizure.
Right.
It just looks like they're spacing out or doing normal things, or like they're ignoring you and their body is still continuing to move like normal. Mm-hmm. But they're gone. They're in a seizure. And so for me, like that was just so hard to see. But he was cooking, he picked up a hot pan and he got second and third degree burns on his fingers and palms. And so in that situation, like, he ended up having to have 4 skin graft surgeries. And the skin graft surgeries ended up being higher priority than brain surgery for his tumor, because he could lose the ability to move his joints if he didn't get the surgery right away. Like, if the skin tightened too much and his joints stayed like flexed, he wouldn't even be able to move his hands anymore. So it was a really tough year. It was the year before COVID. We were actually quarantining before quarantining became mandatory. So, like, it was just normal life whenever COVID actually did hit. His brain surgery was actually the day before the COVID shutdown. If it had been a day later, we wouldn't have both been able to be at the hospital, my husband and I. So I just feel like God's hands were all over that situation. But because my son couldn't use his hands, and also he had to quit any kind of sports activities that he was really into at the time and everything, like, he lost his ability to do everything. He sunk into a really big depression. And then the medications that they were putting him on to try and stop the seizures made the depression worse. They were supposed to be uppers, but for him, for some reason, they were downers. And it amplified his depression to where sometimes he became suicidal. And there were a few times I walked in on him trying to noose himself in his bedroom. And I mean, it was just at that point that I was like, okay, I can't let my son die. And so I started taking all my tears into my closet and crying in there and then coming back out. And I was like the Tony Robbins for my family at that point. I was like, cool, what are we going to do today to make today a good day? What are we planning for tomorrow that's going to make tomorrow a good day? Like, let's plan ahead. And I started doing little things like that every single day, coming out, being positive around my kids, trying to make the days fun. And we were watching the TV series about Michael Jordan called The Last Dance. Mm-hmm. And we were watching that, my husband and I, with our son. And the other kids didn't really care, but my son did. And he would sit down with us because I was trying to, like, by osmosis, infuse all of the good positivity things that I possibly could into his life. And I realized at some point that he's sitting here watching Michael Jordan, and he liked a lot of YouTubers at the time. So he's watching like Mr. Beast and some of the other really famous YouTubers, and he's seeing them as, okay, they're able to do and accomplish these great and amazing things because of what they had in their background or what they went through or who they are. And the thing is that's third-hand knowledge. It's not even secondhand knowledge, and it's certainly not firsthand knowledge. And I realized he needed to see that firsthand. And that was when it hit me that I needed to show him, because I wasn't doing it. I came up one day and I was talking to him and I was like, okay, I know you wanted to start this business. And he was like, Mom, I can't do it. He's like, I don't have the ability. I can't use my hands. I can't do all of this. And I was like, you know what? You can do and be whatever you want in life as long as you pursue it with all your might. Mm-hmm. And that really hit me like a punch to the gut that I wasn't doing it and I wasn't showing him firsthand. So that was when I decided to start relentlessly pursuing my own business without my husband. I wasn't standing in my husband's shadow anymore. He was in the military full time. So he was gone like all day. And so I couldn't just be like, hey, you start a business and I'll support you. I had to go do my own thing. And I'm so grateful for the fact that he was busy. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it. I would have just stood in his shadow again for the umpteenth time. And so that was when I started pursuing my business. It wasn't until 2 weeks after my son's brain surgery when I actually paid $10,000 to jump into the very first mentorship that I was ever a part of. It wasn't until then that I actually made waves in my business and actually got my first client. And I remember my first client was like $3,800 and he did it on a toupee. So I collected $1,900 and I was like stupid excited about that $1,900. I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm doing it. And it was fun. What was really funny is it's like, I was so excited about that. And then the next month was $7,200 collected. The next month was $12,000 collected. The next month was $20,000 collected. And then in my first 6 months of business, I'd collected over $100,000. It completely transformed my family's life. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that I can't say that if that situation with my son hadn't happened, that I would be where I am today. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think I would have taken those steps. It's crazy how sometimes we have to hit a type of rock bottom in our life. And our rock bottom is actually, it's not like the worst of the worst place. It's not a hell. It's actually our origin story. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like in Psalm 23, where it talks about, yea, though I walk through the valley of shadow of death. And I heard a pastor say one time, and it was just hilarious. It's like, well, you know, if you're walking through the valley of the shadow of death, you're supposed to walk through it. Don't like set up and make camp there. And so many people will. They'll get stuck in that wallowing, that grief, that shame, that guilt, that sadness. And they'll never shift it into that anger and that righteous indignation and that determination. And it's like, if you can just shift your energy from sadness and grief into anger about what caused the sadness and what caused the grief, what was the real cause? Because it's not ever a person. Mm-hmm. It's like a situation or it's a thing. This is where we get the people who discover the cure for cancer. This is where we get the people who created those amazing surgeries that helped our families, mm-hmm. our family members. This is where we get the people who discover the best ways to put our voice out into the world in marketing so that we can actually reach the audience who needs us most. Like, this is where that happens. It's in those moments of anger that shift us into a different energy that causes change and transformation and then helps everyone in the world, or as some people call it, the collective consciousness. Like, it raises the energy of everybody. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And I've noticed over the years, the clients that they're excited, they want to hire me. And then I say, well, these are the things that I think you need to do right now. And they're resistant. And then they get so resistant, they're like, well, Rob, that is too much. I can't do it. In fact, I'm not even going to send you the money. Let's forget it and table this for 6 months. And then they come back in 6 months. Oh, I'm ready now. Oh, my prices have doubled. What? And then they start getting angry. And I'm like, are you really ready? But they're not ready. And it's like, it's the pattern. I can instinct. I give people like just three questions to ask, and I'm like, you can't even answer these three questions right. Yeah, I had someone that actually wrote books. It was a famous author. They came to me and they said, Rob, we need more help with our marketing. I said, okay, but you're not doing this. You're not doing this. You're not doing this. People don't know who you are anymore. You haven't written a book in 10 years. You know, so what I want you to do is just pick up your phone and make 10 little videos. I want to see what you can do. Put them on TikTok, put them on Facebook, put them anywhere. I just want to see that you can do it. Did they do it? No, not at all. And I just think there's people People want more out of life, but they're not willing to put the action into it. And you know, when I look at all the things in my life with my kids and my dad and my relatives, you know, I'm the one that's constantly pushing them to do more because I want to see them excel. You know, I want to see them be healthy, but, you know, they can only do what they want to do. Yeah. So it does it. And there's times in my life, and I can't say that it's been a lot, just like as any entrepreneur, there's periods of doubt, depression, but I limit it to try to maybe 5 minutes a day. You know, I can't dwell on that. I got to keep moving forward. You know, oh, I wish I was that. If you want to wish, then do it. You know, make it happen. I've always just pushed forward. I've been an entrepreneur for 31 years. You know, owner of this agency for 25 years. And, you know, doubt can't live more than 5 minutes. It just can't. You got to keep pushing forward because you got to look at the opportunities. You know, I always, and not to say that the sun will come out tomorrow because that really annoys me in that song, but there's always going to be a brighter day, you know, a silver lining somewhere. You got to look for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, technically, the sun is always shining. If you've ever flown in an airplane over the clouds, it's like underneath the clouds, there's a storm. But then when the plane shifts above the clouds, there's the sun. And it's just like you see the storm brewing below. Mm-hmm. You see, it looks tumultuous, torrential, but you're smooth sailing. Mm-hmm. And so it's whatever frequency or vibration we're tuning into, right? I mentioned this earlier before we actually started recording about radio frequencies. And it's like sometimes we're tuned into the wrong channel. So we feel disconnected, mm-hmm. Whether that's feeling disconnected from your audience and like your audience can't hear you for whatever reason, you're just not speaking in the language of the right frequency.
Right.
So you just have to tune the dial. You have to go actually just talk to a few people, have a few conversations, learn how they're talking about it, because we're talking in a different language that doesn't make sense to them.
Well, we're not our authentic self. I mean, when I got on social media back in, I think it was 2007, 2008, finally on Facebook in 2009, you know, I walked on eggshells because I wanted to be so cautious about what I posted and how I posted. I didn't want to get too political and. Then one time I did get political and I lost the $75,000 account. I thought, this is bullcrap. You know, I'm sarcastic. Why can't I be sarcastic when it comes to posting? So I did. I got more clients because it was my frequency, you know, and people were starting to say, hey, that's the authentic Rob, you know. And I put that sarcasm in books and people love it. You know, it's, I think they really want to see the real you.
Yeah. And a lot of times too, I think that there's like a disconnect. It's like if two people are trying to have a conversation and one person keeps saying something and it's like the other person is listening, but they can't hear it.
Right.
And there's a lot of people who feel really misunderstood. And so they're like, well, maybe I should just stop talking. But that's not the answer. It's like if you were actually in a one-to-one conversation with somebody you care about, let's just put it that way, right? It's somebody you care about and you're having a one-to-one conversation with them. If they're not understanding you, what do? You're like, okay, well, how do I explain this differently? Mm-hmm. And you start talking to them in a language that will make sense for them. And you say, okay, well, let me explain it this way. And you explain it a different way. And you're like, does that make sense? And if they're like, no, you try something different. Most people won't take the time to do that in their content or their communication online. And it's like, it's so silly because it's something we all know how to do in person. But when it comes to online, people treat online like it's different. And the reality is it's not different at all. Right. Online is exactly the same as in person. In fact, you have to be even more direct.
Yeah. But what I've also noticed is, especially with marketers, what I call bipolar marketing, they're all over the place with their message, and nobody can understand. You know, maybe it's a simple message one day, very complicated message the other day, or then the third day, it's totally against what they just said the first time. And I see that a lot on LinkedIn with these younger marketers that are trying to get their footing. They're trying to get their message across. I get it. But it doesn't always work because your audience sees those things. Maybe not all the time, but for me, I pick up on patterns. I see what people are posting. And does it align with what they just posted the day before? No, it's the total opposite. And so I think there's a giant disconnect on social media. You know, if I met you in person, or I met you right now, like on a podcast, I get to know the real you. But just having these flashes of one-way conversations on social media doesn't always cut it.
That's so true, which is one of the main reasons why when I'm training people on social media content, there is the concept that I got from John Maxwell. I took it from his 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. He talks about the idea of being interested versus interesting. Mm-hmm. And most people, when they start producing their marketing content, they are trying to be the most interesting person in the room. But nobody really cares about what you have to say when they meet you for the first time, except for what it can do for them or how it's going to affect them subconsciously. This is a subconscious human trait. We are looking to protect ourselves and to help ourselves grow. We're looking for, if you've ever heard of Tony Robbins' six basic human needs, we need variety or uncertainty. We need certainty and stability. We need the ability to have contribution. And when you're trying to be the most interesting person in the room, you're the only one contributing. So you're getting a sense of fulfillment, but they're not. And it also over time ends up not being a sense of fulfillment because you feel like you're contributing, but then nobody's saying anything. Nobody's really liking your post in the way that you want. It's not really getting viral traction. And it ends up feeling bad. So then you feel like worthless. I've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs who feel like they don't matter, who feel worthless because they're putting up content and they're like, well, I'm not going to waste time on social media anymore because of this. But the real problem is that they're trying to be the most interesting person in the room rather than being interested. Mm-hmm. If you write your content in a way that is for the reader and is interested in them, and it's like, what are your opinions? What would you add? Those are little things that you can add to your content that now invite the reader to be a part of it. Or like, hey, I heard this really cool activity. It takes like 5 seconds to do it with me. And then you share what the activity it is or what the activity is. And you're like, you try it right now. And then let me know what it was like for you. This is what happened for me. If you wrote a piece of content like that, now you're inviting the reader to be a part of whatever it is that you're doing. And so you guys are going together instead of you trying to drag everyone across the finish line, which becomes very effortful and causes a lot of burnout for people over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I know that for the listener, you know, that the first half of this podcast, you know, was very sad. And we were talking about our personal experiences. But what made you start helping experts? Because, yeah, you started with your family and you're trying to get them, you know, with your Tony Robbins, you know, feelings, to try to up their spirits. But how does that translate to the experts?
So I had somebody get on a call with me. I wasn't sure if I was going to do an offer for B2B, business to business, or if I was going to do mindset, which is more B2C. I mean, I can work with business owners, but I was trying to do mindset stuff before, and I have a lot of things that I'd worked through on mindset. I'd never had certifications or coaching in that or whatever. It was just over the years, I discovered some things that were really powerful shifters for me. So I wasn't sure which one I was going to do, and I got on a call with a salesperson, and the salesperson was like, well, you know, what have you already done? And I kind of shared a few stories, and he's like, okay, well, you've already done this before. Why not just do that? And I was like, you know what? Why not? And And then I had an experience where I tried to do a workshop at one point through another DIY program that I thought was going to have mentorship, but they sold me. And at the time, it was the most money I'd ever spent on something like that, outside of college. And it was $2,000 on a DIY course that I thought was going to have mentorship, and it didn't. So big, like, slap in the face, wake up call realization that, you know, $2,000 is not what you get. Like, you don't get one-to-one. If for $2,000, you might get group coaching, but the level of coaching that you're going to get is like a few steps ahead of you rather than being leaps and bounds ahead of you. If you want like real leaps and bounds ahead of you coaching, it's going to cost more than that. And I didn't realize that at the time. Anyways, did the DIY course. I tried to do an event for, I don't even remember how much I was charging, but nobody bought tickets, and it was for mindset. And so I shifted my message into B2B, and suddenly I sold a few tickets, and it wasn't anything amazing. I wasn't super great at the time. I sold 3 people in, and I think I collected around like $297 or something like that. The first ticket I sold in was my mom, and the second ticket I sold in was my aunt, and it was because my mom bought her a ticket. And then the third one I sold in was somebody else who was in the program with me, and she wanted to support me. And it ended up being a great, simple workshop, but it wasn't, that's not going to make money in a business, like just selling to a few family members and stuff like that, despite what network marketing tells you. so that was my first experience with that. But the reason why I have a passion for helping all of these experts who can't get their message out is because I was the person who needed an expert. When my son first had the burns, it was like literally the skin on his fingers and palms was like egg noodles. Like, it was completely burned off. All the nerve endings were burned off. So he didn't even feel it. So after he got past the shock and the screaming and the crying, because initially it had pain, and around the edges there was pain. But then we put like some stuff on it. We treated it before we could get him down to a hospital. He couldn't even feel it because all of his nerve endings had been burned off. And so he ended up having to have skin graft surgery to save his nerve ending. So we had a triage burn surgeon who did his first skin graft surgery. And that first skin graft surgery, he tried to get us into rehab. The rehab wouldn't get approved by insurance. If I had known how important rehab was to his recovery and to the skin graft surgery, I would have done whatever I needed to do. I would have paid out of pocket for that. But I didn't understand. And there's so many people who end up having to suffer really hard situations. And so my son was in so much pain. And like I said, he could have killed himself because we didn't have the information that we needed and because we didn't even know that the expert existed. So he ended up going through 2 skin graft surgeries with the burn surgeon, who's a triage surgeon. And then after his second one, and we finally got into rehab, the burn surgeon was like, I think I'm going to recommend you to a hand surgeon. I didn't even know hand surgeons existed. I was like, why didn't we do this in the first place? And then he's like, and I'm also going to recommend you to a hand therapist. Also didn't know that existed. And if we had had access to that in the very beginning, I would have done whatever it took financially to cover that. And I would have been like, you know, forget you, insurance. Like, I'm going to take care of this. And the thing is that most people just don't even know that you exist. Mm-hmm. And you think that people are objecting to you, but if they are objecting at all, it's because they really want to work with you and they're looking for a way to say yes. And it's our responsibility, your responsibility as the leader, to guide them on how they can say yes to themselves. Because most people don't know how to say yes to themselves. And mindset is about 75% of what I do. I teach people how to make more money on social media with their content. I started out in Facebook groups and communities and helping them to monetize and engage their communities and build, like, turning these brands into movements with communities online. And it was super fun. But 75% of what I've done since the beginning has been mindset on getting people to overcome their own objections to themselves so that they actually show up for their audience in the way that gets them connected. Mm-hmm. Like, people are so hesitant to really connect with people online for various different reasons. I could dive into all the different mindsets, but that would be a whole episode in and of itself.
Yeah. You know, it's And I've noticed it on LinkedIn a lot. You know, LinkedIn is supposed to be a professional network, and lately it's I think it's gone sideways. People are very serious. People are you know, you post something and they're like, "This isn't Facebook." You know what? No, it's not Facebook. But the message is important that you should listen to. And they're just, I don't know. I think the people that have no sarcasm in their life go on LinkedIn and then complain about everybody posting. And it's like, why? You know, to me, I know that as an entrepreneur, I don't have any local clients. They're all scattered all over the world. You know, and sometimes I forget what time zone we're in because, you know, people just communicate. But we do, I think as entrepreneurs, we do want connection. We don't want to be that lonely entrepreneur. We want to be that person that has connections that we can reach out to. And like if my wife and I wanted to go out to dinner with you and your husband, that's connection. You know, that's something that I like to do, you know? And so a lot of my clients, I've never met personally. You know,
I've been blessed. I've been super blessed that I've had the opportunity to go around to different states as a speaker, and I've gotten to meet a lot of my clients in person. Sometimes we'll be in similar masterminds and I've gotten to meet them in person. And then hosting events, you know, it's like once you start hosting events that are in-person events, you'll have clients who like fly out and stuff like that. I've been super blessed to be able to meet a lot of my clients in person. And this last year I decided I needed more in-person for my own mental health. And so I started reaching out to the local in-person connections out here. I have more than 100 entrepreneurial friends who have their own businesses in the area out here. It's crazy. And I'm in Franklin, Tennessee, just south of Nashville. Mm-hmm. There's so, if you throw a stick out here, you're going to hit an entrepreneur or a business owner. And so I feel like I've been really blessed. So I started connecting more with the local community out here, and I've gotten several local clients, which is cool because I'll go to the movie theater and I'll be like, "Hey, there's, how are you?" And it'll be one of my previous clients. And so it's a lot of fun. I think getting to meet the people in person. Now there are some that are like overseas in like the UK or Singapore or Hong Kong or even South Africa. I'm trying to think where all I've had clients, Australia, mm-hmm. South America. I would still love to meet those clients in person mm-hmm. someday.
Well, you know, I recently took a group of entrepreneurs to Disney World, and we did that in January. And two of the attendees came from Australia. And it was That's great because I took them around the resorts. I took them into the parks. I gave them a VIP experience. We had dinners together, and it was just fantastic. And then they got to have their own chapter in a book. The first book was called Marketing the Magic. The second book was Embracing the Magic. All about the experiences at Walt Disney World. And I love to take entrepreneurs there because Disney is one of the biggest marketers in the world. And you go there, it's like, you know, a living classroom of learning. And you know, they just had a joy, and you look at their expressions on their faces when they, you know, experience something for the first time, and you know, We went to Animal Kingdom, and there's a VIP experience where you get harnessed, and then they put you on a wire, and you got to cross wooden bridges over alligators, and you got to do this and that. And it was just, it's one of those overcoming your fear experiences, but it was just fantastic. And those are the experiences I love to do now. Taking entrepreneurs to whether it be an amusement park, whether it be a destination of some sort, because they're getting real life teaching in the moment, you know, in that particular space, and I think it ingrains in you so much faster.
And it's that significant emotional events. Yeah. There's I've recognized over the years, there's two ways to shift a belief. One is with consistency of thought, like you're creating a new thought pattern and building a bridge belief that helps connect you to a new belief. And you do that consistency over time. And it doesn't have to take a long time. It just needs to be every single time the thought comes up, you have to take control of it and consciously choose. But the second way is a significant emotional event. And that's why Tony Robbins does firewalks. Mm-hmm. And why firewalks work really well the first time, and they have diminishing returns after that, because after the first time, it's no longer a significant emotional event.
Right.
The first time, it's very significant. And so it causes that shift. And so you're taking people down something that can be kind of like negative if they're like afraid of heights, or if there's other things that might, like jump scares and stuff like that, might startle them and whatever. Those experiences, that significant emotional event, is great for belief shifting, especially because you're probably pre-framing them and having them have certain ideas or beliefs or affirmations going into it. So they're really locking that in. And I love that. I think that's so cool.
Yeah. So yeah, how do people find you? Where do they go?
So you can find me on any social media platform, Sierra Lueck. It's C-I-E-R-A. Last name is L-U-E-C-K. I'm primarily on Facebook. Facebook Messenger pushes right to my phone. And then I also have a website, sierraluick.com, that you can go to. One of my favorite things to give people, I have a pay what it's worth to you, so that you can pay it forward to other people who maybe can't afford something like this. But I have an entire list of like 80 viral questions that are proven to get really great engagement. So if your audience hasn't been engaging with you in a while, that's a great tool that you can go grab from my website. There's a link to it on there, I believe. But the 80 viral questions, and then I also have a brief training in there so that you can, if you need to adapt it for your audience, because it, maybe a couple of them don't fit, I show you how to adapt them for your audience, and then to also use it for making sales if you want to make sales with lead magnets and stuff. So,
well, this is great. And I hope everyone listening got a lot out of this. I little sad stories here and there, but those stories help us become better entrepreneurs, because it builds in us empathy, you know, and that empathy can lead to a lot of great sales, honestly, because we can now, you know, become closer to our clients in a way that other people can't. So visit sierraluick.com. And tell her that I sent you. So we'll see you on the next episode. Adios.